was not anything that was on the table when they built these safe rooms. In fact, my daughter, who actually lives on the kibbutz and has three children there, she had this fear of infiltration, this inexplicable fear of infiltration from when she was about 9. And we kept telling her, you don't have to be scared. We've got the border fence, and we have the kibbutz fence, and the army are all around, and we're safe, we're protected. October 7th, her worst nightmare on steroids took place.
We're coming to you from the 2024 National Religious Broadcasters Convention. Hi, I'm Byron Tyler here on the Bot Radio Network. This is Mid-South Viewpoint, and it's our privilege to come to this convention once a year. It rotates in different areas of our country. Last year, we were in Orlando. This year, we're in Nashville. And I understand next year, 2025, the convention will be in Dallas, Texas. But we have the opportunity to meet so many people, ministries, individuals, and stories to share. Many of you know, in 2018, I had the experience of a lifetime. Twice, I got to go to Israel. And it was like first time drinking from a fire hose. And the second time, I was able to digest a little more, see the beauty of the land, taste the food, and meet the people. It was the Bot Radio Network educational tour to Israel. I just love Israel. If you're a follower of Christ and you read your Bible, you know the Jewish people gave us the Bible, our Savior Jesus Christ being Jew himself. We have a love for Israel as Christians. October 7th, last year, 2023, was a horrific day. A shockwave rang across when we discovered that Hamas from Gaza had come over and attacked Israel in surprise. Our hearts were broken. We were watching the news. We've been praying, trying to do what we can. Many are finding ways they can support the International Fellowship of Christian and Jews, which is on exhibit here at the NRB convention, has worked very diligently for many, many years to support the Jewish people. A humanitarian nonprofit building bridges between Christians and Jews by blessing Israel and the Jewish people with humanitarian care and life-saving aid. Well, on October 7th, Adele Raymer was in Israel. She's with us now. She survived that attack. And I can't imagine, Adele, what you went through. And we want to share about that a little bit. But before we do, I want to hear about you because I understand you grew up here in the United States. So tell me about life growing up.
So I was born in New York, grew up in the Bronx. I was in a Zionist youth movement as a child, went to summer camps. And during the winter, we did all different educational activities. After high school, I went on a gap year to Israel, and I fell in love with the place, just like you. At the end of that gap year, I went back to the States to go to university, like all good Jewish girls are supposed to do. But then before it actually started, the Yom Kippur War broke out in 1973, and I said, well, what am I doing in the States? Israel needs me. So I came to live on a kibbutz in the Arava Desert. That was founded, it had just been founded by people from my youth movement. I was drafted as soon as I got to Israel because I was 19 and it was wartime still. And through my army service, I arrived at Kibbutz Nirim, which is where I am today, which is about a mile away from the border. But when I came to live on Nirim, it was not a war zone. It was 100% heaven. It was beautiful and peaceful and just a great place to live in a friendly community and a supportive community. And I settled down there, got married, had kids, got divorced, got married again, had some more kids. And today I live there with, I'm unfortunately a widow, but one of my daughters settled down on Nirim and had three children, officially still live there. Although we cannot be there because we're refugees in our own land. It's a war zone and it's very noisy. So although we're not scared of infiltration anymore right now because the IDF have all eyes on that area, there's still rockets and a lot of noise of what's going on the other side of the border.
Would you explain, Adele, to our listeners, when you mentioned kibbutz, some might not understand what that is and the living environment, what a kibbutz is. Could you share just a little bit about that?
Well, that's a whole podcast in itself. But a kibbutz is a communal settlement. It was based on socialistic ideals, and the kibbutzim started at the turn of the 20th century, maybe even the end of the 19th, as places for Jews to come and live and build a community. And because of security and financial issues, the children would sleep in children's houses, not at home with the parents. And the parents had, at the beginning, just tents. You know, they invested the money in the children to build so that the children would get the best conditions. And the parents lived in tents, later on houses, around the area of the children's houses. And as a socialized community, we used to work and our money would come into the kibbutz and each one would get a stipend, regardless of you're the CEO of a company or you're washing the dishes at the dining room, you'd get the same stipend. Most kibbutzim have privatized since, as did ours, but it's very important to us, communal, traditional, communal activities. So we pay very high taxes to support the beautification of the community and holidays together and education and health. And we're a strong community.
And definitely I would say those living in the kibbutz would be very pro-Israel, love their land. I mean, this is where your heart is, right?
I believe everybody that lives in Israel is pro-Israel, but the people who live on kibbutzim are really the salt of the earth. We work the land right up to the fence, the very last centimeter. My kibbutz is totally agricultural based, so the land is important to us. And working the land, we grow avocado and peanuts and wheat and barley and bananas.
You know, Adele, when I took that trip to Israel, to my amazement, I saw the beauty of the agriculture when we would take the bus tour to the land, wherever we were, groves of bananas, the avocados you mentioned, and the nuts, and the food was so fresh. Here in America, you know, we have a tendency to eat a lot of processed food, but one of the things I enjoyed while we were in Israel was such fresh food. You know, it was so good. And to know that not only are many kibbutzes and other agriculture areas in Israel growing this fresh produce for the people of Israel, but so much of it is exported throughout the Mediterranean.
Indeed it is. We grow biological sweet potatoes that are a big export. And yeah, you know, we came to make the desert bloom, like Ben-Gurion said. And my kibbutz was actually one of the pioneering communities in 1946. When Ben-Gurion wanted there to be a Jewish presence in the Negev so that whenever the state would eventually be announced, be formed, there would be Jewish communities in the Negev, and our community was one of them. And that sort of leads me up to my October 7th story, because on October 6th, we were celebrating our 77th anniversary for Kibbutz Nirim. And we had a wonderful celebration. We had lots of visitors, some of whom slept over, like my son, who doesn't live there anymore, but was visiting. Before I went to bed that evening, I told him, if you don't see me in the morning when you wake up, don't worry. I want to go out before sunrise and take pictures of a field of wildflowers that are in bloom around that period of time, around September, squills. Thankfully, I was too tired to get up that morning, because if I hadn't been, I wouldn't be here talking to you today, because the area that I wanted to go to take pictures was rife with terrorists, and people were murdered there. So October 7th began with a heavy barrage of incoming rockets. Now, we live so close to the border. We're a mile away from the border. We're so close that from the minute you hear that incoming rocket warning until the minute you hear the explosion, you have 0 to 10 seconds. And I say zero because if it's a mortar, you don't always get warning even. You just hear the explosion. So that morning, I was still in my bed, because I didn't get up to go take pictures of the flowers. And we started hearing the incoming rocket warnings. I ran to my safe room, which is also my guest room. So my son was in there already because he was sleeping. He's 33 years old. And it was just such a heavy barrage and so widespread from north of Tel Aviv until south of us. It was just, we saw that it was something unusual. And what I realized in retrospect is that it was to take attention away from the main event that was going on along the border, where thousands of Hamas and Islamic Jihad terrorists were infiltrating the border at the same time. They infiltrated over 20 communities. They infiltrated a rave party with thousands of young adults, and so many were killed there and taken hostage. And the cities, Netivot and Sderot and Ofakim were infiltrated. Even the army bases, they were just caught off guard. It was a very well-planned attack that had been in the planning for months, if not years. All at once, they set off explosives, they knocked out the cameras, so the IDF were blind. They had no idea what was coming. A little bit after it started, we started getting notification that Israel had been invaded. We were told to go out of our safe rooms, to lock all doors and windows, to go back into the safe room and lock the safe room. Problem with that is the safe room door does not lock. The safe room was built to keep us safe from rockets, not from infiltration. This was not anything that was on the table when they built these safe rooms. In fact, my daughter, who actually lives on the kibbutz and has three children there, she had this fear of infiltration, this inexplicable fear of infiltration from when she was about 9. And we kept telling her, you don't have to be scared. We've got the border fence and we have the kibbutz fence and the army are all around and we're safe, we're protected. October 7th, her worst nightmare on steroids took place. We're sitting there and the only way, in fact, that you can lock the door is by pulling down on the handle, which makes iron prongs go into the wall or the floor. So when we heard that we were being invaded, we're sitting there waiting for news. We didn't get any official news. The army wasn't sending out any messages. The army were neutralized. They were crickets. And the kibbutz has an internal messaging system. And all of a sudden we started seeing messages that people were saying they can hear gunfire. I know what rockets exploding sound like, but we've never heard gunfire in the kibbutz. And then they're saying that they hear Arabic. They hear voices in Arabic, people shouting in Arabic. Our kibbutz is a small community. We're about 450 people, and I know where everybody lives. So I'm watching on the internal messaging system the progression of the terrorists as they're getting closer and closer to where we are. I see that they're coming closer to where my son-in-law is with my grandchildren and to my daughter's house. And you can't do anything. And we hear people starting to say they're burning our house. So all these people are watching virtually, but we can't do anything. Our first responders went out, but there were only about 4 of them. It was vacation time. A good number of them were away, and some of them were incapacitated, like my son-in-law, because he's separated from my daughter. So he was at home alone with my 3 grandchildren, age 2, 6, and 8. So he couldn't go out and leave them alone. At one point, we start hearing Arabic also outside our house and gunshots. And my son, who understands a little bit Arabic, said that he heard somebody saying, come away from there. We didn't understand what that really meant, but we looked at each other and we were just waiting for them to burst in. I was sure I was not going to see another sunrise. You know, I was thinking, here I am in my own land, in Israel, with an army to protect me, and I'm in the same situation that our forefathers were in Germany during the Holocaust. The Nazis of 2023 are on our doorstep. And it worked out that they were literally on our doorstep, because later on, when I opened the door to my safe room, I realized that the slats on my window had been broken. And that's what he heard. They started to break in, and then for some reason, divine intervention or dumb luck got called away. At the same time, unbeknownst to me, my son-in-law heard the terrorists entering his house. He told my grandchildren, hide yourselves under the blanket. Don't come out. No matter what happens, you're going to hear a loud noise, but don't come out from under that blanket. As soon as the terrorist started opening the handle, he kicked the door open and shot the terrorist. I almost lost my grandchildren that day. They would have been either murdered or kidnapped.
You mentioned the safe house. I remember when we were in Israel, this is custom in places, even in hotels, have safe rooms and safe places, because oftentimes there are missile attacks, like you mentioned, in various places. So it's in the back of your mind that that could happen, and you know where the safe room is. You know, like you said, the military, you trust their ability to, with special technology, to knock those missiles out of the sky. And life pretty soon goes back to normal, but this is totally different. This is not your normal situation here. We're talking about war. This is war, and it's happening now while we are still here in February of 2024, when the attacks began on October 7th. Have you personally lost any family members or friends because of the attack?
Thank God my family are safe. I have lost more friends than I can count. More friends than I can count. On the back of my dog tag, I engraved the names of my very good friend Judy and her husband Gadi, who were out on a sunrise walk on October 7th. We knew that they'd been shot, that Gadi had been shot in the head and Judy had been shot in her arm and her face, but they were listed as kidnapped. So I put their names on the back of this dog tag, hoping that when they come back, I will be able to give it back to them. They're not coming back. They're not coming back. There are 134 Israelis still in Gaza. Two of them are people from my community. We had five people that were kidnapped altogether on that day. The three women were released after some 50-odd days in the hell of the Hamas tunnels. Two of them are still there. And we will not be able to get back our lives. We will not be able to go back to normal until all of our people, every single one of them, are back home. And many of them are no longer alive. My friend's body is hostage in Gaza. But as each day goes by, the chances of more of them coming back alive get lower. I have personal friends who are in Gaza in their 70s, in their 80s, who need medicine, who have heart conditions. We don't know if they're alive. We saw one of them on one of the Hamas propaganda videos a few weeks ago. So we know that he was alive then, but we don't know. You know, each day goes by, it's a war zone. Some of the hostages have been killed inadvertently by IDF attacks. We have to get them out of there. We have to get them home.
Adele, there are those who are trying to persuade people of the world that this didn't happen. Just like in Hitler's day when the Nazis ruled with their terror and history moves forward saying that, oh, it never happened. But you're describing personal, you were there, you heard, you saw, your friends, you're wearing this in remembrance. How does it make you feel knowing that this is something that is real and our lives are not the same and people trying to defend the fact that evil was not committed that day on October 7th.
So the Nazis were meticulous record keepers, and they kept records of each and every person that they murdered. In the same way, the Hamas terrorists who infiltrated used their GoPros to take pictures of the atrocities that they were committing. And they were so proud of it and announcing it proudly to the world, calling up their parents. I just slaughtered a Jew and I played football with his head. And the parents cheered. And this is all on record and this is now. So I don't understand how people can be denying it. You know, I grew up in America and we grew up on believing in the importance of cultural diversity and protecting the people who are minorities. And the Jews are in danger of extinction. We are an endangered minority. I don't understand how this gets flipped so that people don't understand that they have to protect their Jews. America has to protect her Jews. There are Jews who are scared to walk around with their Star of David. They take the mezuzot off the doors because they're scared. America has to protect her people, her Jews. The world has to protect their Jews. There's one tiny little Jewish country. And how many tens of Muslim Islamic countries? It just doesn't compete. I don't understand where this insanity comes from.
I know you with many people are praying for the Shalom of Israel to return. These precious lives that are hostage and that could be back with their loved ones. And those who have not had maybe proper burial and their lives can have closure, you know, and I know that's something we're praying for. There's no thought of when this is going to come to an end. How do you process that emotionally? How do you get through day to day now since October 7th when each day continues to move forward? Where do you find strength, Adele, in your life now?
So I don't do victim well. So I do, like I'm doing now, and I tell the story and I blog and I have a Facebook group with 12,000 followers, Life on the Border with Gaza, that I write on and update on with other moderators. Judy was one of the moderators. And I keep my eye on the prize, and the prize is the future. And the future for us is we're starting to work on raising money, not only to fix my community, but to build it bigger and better and stronger and safer than it was before, because we have to be able to convince the families with young children to come back, those who will, not all of them will, to bring new families in. Because if you give up on Nirim, you can give up on Israel. You can't keep running away from terror. And where isn't there terror? Be'er Sheva gets rockets, Ashkelon, Ashdod get rockets, Tel Aviv gets rockets, they've had buses blowing up, Jerusalem has had rammings and knifings up north, you get rockets. Here in Nashville, Nazis marched through the center of Nashville just last Saturday. You can't run away from terror. You have to face up to the terror and say, I'm here, and you can't do anything to get rid of me.
Adele, I discovered that one of your other things that you do is you're a hospital clown. Can you tell me briefly about that? And have you been able to do any of that? Tell me about that part of your story, being a hospital clown.
So, as I said, I lost my husband in 2008. And I love theater, and I've always loved theater. I discovered that there was a hospital clown thing from Patch Adams, the movie Patch Adams with Robin Williams. I said, that's what I want to do. And when I discovered that there was a course in Israel in 2011, I went and took this course, and I loved it. It was wonderful, but unfortunately, my clown has been comatose since COVID, and I was just hoping to get back into it. I was just starting to get back into it when this war happened. You know, I'm based in Be'er Sheva now until we could go home. So I'm hoping that I will have the wherewithal to pull out my clown. I still have my nose. I take it every place I go. I don't have it in this bag, but it's upstairs. I'm hoping I'll be able to resuscitate my clown and get back to that, because it gives me so much to go into the hospitals and put a smile on a child's face in the hospital, not only children, you know, taking them virtually out of the hospital for a few minutes, do some magic tricks, be funny, do stuff that will make them laugh.
Through the pain and trauma that you and your nation have been experiencing now since October 7th, not that there's humor in that, but are you able to find something that you can laugh about? Not in light of the terror, I don't mean that. Just from the human side, just seeing maybe the blessing of God that you can smile about. Have you been able to do that?
Sure. In our community, we've certainly been able to do that. And we're preparing for Purim, which is coming up. And even before we left Eilat, I'm also an amateur filmer. So we wrote a text of a little clip laughing at our time in Eilat, life in a hotel, which is crazy in itself, making that into a movie. So sure, you know, there's some dark humor, but laughter heals. So you got to find it wherever you can.
Adele, God bless you and the people of Israel as we stand with Israel. Pray for shalom to rest upon Israel, and these families can be restored and your hearts can heal. I know it's a process. God bless you. Thank you so much for spending time here.
Yeah, I just want to say that I have gotten so much inspiration and strength from being here and seeing how many people in the Christian community in the States are supporting us. And even the group that is hosting this, International Federation of Christians and Jews, you know, some of us left with the clothing on our backs on October 8th. And within a few days, we got funds from this organization to go out and buy clothing and shoes and to be able to help us get what we need in our time of need.
So you've experienced firsthand the work of International Fellowship of Christian and Jews. And I say that because on Bot Radio Network, they do advertisements imploring our listeners to give, sharing the story. So the needs are there. You're actually benefiting from that.
Absolutely. They give food to the poor, and they bring food to the Ukraine, and they do such wonderful things. But I myself, in my community, we have safe rooms, external safe rooms, so that if you're walking along the path, an incoming rocket alert catches you, you can just duck into that safe room. So they've donated safe rooms on my kibbutz. They've given that money to help us get back on our feet, like right when it was needed.
Adele, this has been such a honor and blessing to meet you, my dear friend. And I thank you for telling your story. And we want to continue to pray for you, the people in your kibbutz, and as you rebuild lives, and pray for the peace of Jerusalem and for Israel. God bless you. Adele, thank you so much for joining us.
And I would love to give you a yellow ribbon to wear on your lapel for our hostages.
I will proudly wear this on my lapel. Thank you so much, my dear friend.
Thank you.
Well, friends, that's all the time we have on this edition of Mid-South Viewpoint here on the Bot Radio Network, coming to you from the 2024 National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Byron Tyler. Shalom.